And here we are. Another day. Another dawn.
Whoa.
Time for another episode of Free Roam. How are you, Mr. Joe Raptor?
Hey. I'm doing very well. It's been a fun weekend. I had a party. Like, everyone around me is turning 30. As I turned 30 in December as well. So that's nice, because then all the parties are... They put in some extra effort. So that has been nice. It's been finally a bit like a great weather here. We had some sun. And this weekend on Saturday, we will have like 20 degrees, which is pretty great. So people are already saying, hey, should we go to the beach? That's always like the first time the sun breaks through. They're like, also in Amsterdam, like every like bar and like everyone is just going out to do drinks and stuff. So the city feels more alive. So also we had the daylight saving last weekend. So now, it's also lighter later at night. Brighter. So that's great. It's we feel like we survived the winter. And in terms of games, I feel like I can finally breathe.
Yeah.
We still have some Dragon's Dogma 2 stuff to go over. Like, there's still some, like, the end games. I'm not sure if you reached that. That's pretty wild, actually. How much that changes. And already kind of looking ahead, we got some fun topics to discuss that also really kind of reveal that we're in this April May window where new announcements are going to happen. So I'm kind of excited about that, but I will be on a quick break first, and I'm kind of looking forward to that as well. So there won't certainly be a podcast next week, but after that I will be back, fully refreshed and
ready to rock and roll.
Which I'm fresh. Like, I had some people on Twitter say to me, dude, your takes have been really bad the last couple of weeks. Go take a vacation. So I took that to heart and I'm leaving. I was talking about the, I'm not sure if you saw my tweet about that. And did not think that it would like go that viral, but it was talking about how I think the Final Fantasy series kind of has an issue where it's like a pretty old tweet. And after the Dragon's Dogma sales released, it got traction again, because I said that I thought Dragon's Dogma was going to sell more than Final Fantasy 16 and Rebirth. Of course, I said that before the whole bad word of mouth situation with like the microtransactions and stuff. I think that really did hurt the game, sadly. But my point was, a lot of people that are fan of Final Fantasy buy the game day one, and then the sales like fall off 90%. And there are not any new people buying the game, while Dragon's Dogma, a way like newer series compared to Final Fantasy, seems to be doing quite well for itself. But with the 2.5 million versus the 3 or so million for Final Fantasy, people were like, "You're wrong. Go take a vacation. Your takes suck." So,
I do think the evidence is pretty clear that there's an approachability. I'm not going to say accessibility, because that makes it sound like I'm trying to make it out like the games aren't playable for certain people. But it's more that I think Final Fantasy is such a huge franchise at this point, in terms of just number of releases, amount of lore and things. There's just a lot of layers to it. And I know from speaking, and granted this is anecdotal, but I know from speaking to individual people that a lot of them hear like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and they're like, so it's the second part of a remake of a 20-year-old or 30-year-old game. Like, I'm trying to track it and follow it along. And it's just each one of those little things is a speed bump that gets in the way of somebody just hopping on the highway and enjoying the game. And that is just, Dragon's Dogma 2, on the other hand, is, people are like, oh, it's kind of like the first game, but it's way better. You don't need to touch the old game. And these aren't like super narrative heavy games, so it's whatever. And I think that allows for new players to get in and try it. Whereas Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, for example, I know for a fact that there's people in my friend group that just decided not to bother with it because they didn't know how approachable it would be, or whether they would have any idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's like very, like, there are so many like universe, especially right now, that you can get invested in, and it feels like for Final Fantasy, just that ship has sailed for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And what I found interesting about Dragon's Dogma is that when you boot the game up, it doesn't even say in the menu Dragon's Dogma 2, just Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah, they do like the little eyes thing where the eyes. Yeah, have little, yeah.
That is kind of cool, but still, it and I saw some people talk about this as well, and I really agree. It's more like a modern version of the 10-year-old game, and they took just a lot of the systems and just like expanded upon it and made the map way bigger, etc. Versus, yeah, it being a continuation. So I think that also works way better in this day and age.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, we talked about it last summer too, where Final Fantasy 16, you know, it's really hard, I think, for Final Fantasy fans to sympathize with it, because it's like Final Fantasy is amazing. Who wouldn't love this? If they just tried it, they would love it. Which is true, I think, of a lot of people. If they tried it, they'd love it. But I think you got to acknowledge that when you see a title and then you're like 16, it's like, oh my God, this is not like, let's watch a YouTube recap. It's like, I need to set aside a week and do research into the backstory. And as much as you might say, no, they're independent, you can play them alone, that 16 is still very intimidating to a lot of people. So yeah. I would fully expect that the next big Final Fantasy release probably tries something a little bit different. They might even try dropping the number entirely and going for just that a subtitle.
And go multi-platform again. I saw some people talk about that as well. I don't think it will like fix the issue they have, because the biggest titles have been releasing on PlayStation exclusively. I don't think there's like a big audience on PC like waiting. So like we will see when 16 drops probably this year how well it's gonna do, but I don't think that will fix the issue. But over time, if these games keep coming out on all the platforms, that might help.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see a lot of people like say, oh, there have not been like a big PS5 exclusive that really seems to take advantage of the hardware, and I think 16 is like a great example of, I don't think those battles, even though you're not controlling a lot, but just a spectacle, like you're watching one of these older Final Fantasy movies, but actually controlling it as well, which is kind of exciting. I was kind of mind blown by those fights in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look ahead, because thanks, of course, everyone for joining. We are a weekly show. That's at least what we try, and we've been very successful in that. So that's great. And of course, on Spotify, Luke Stevens Live is where we go live on Twitch, on your channel as well, right, Luke?
Yep.
And
Luke Stevens TV on Twitch, Luke Stevens Live on YouTube. Honestly,
so you can catch us live. Yeah. Thanks everyone for joining. I saw some nice comments as well. Some people talked about the microphone, but I think I fixed it. So thanks for noting that. We don't want another show where my mic is kind of peaking. But yeah, we have some fun things to go over. Just before we went live, Ubisoft decided to already promote their Ubisoft Forward event. Of course, every year they're doing, like before Ubisoft Forward was a thing, they did their E3 show. They hired like the big theater in downtown LA. And then, had like a live stage show. Then during COVID, they thought, okay, let's do a direct style show. And now they're going to continue with that because E3 is, of course, gone. But they are saying once again, join us live from LA for Ubisoft Forward on June 10th for updates and upcoming releases. So it seems like they, just like last year, are doing a live show. Do you remember that live show, Luke? Because it was kind of it was not great in terms of, they had some technical issues, let's put it that way.
I'm trying to remember if I...
It had the Skull and Bones song, for example, remember
that? Oh, yes.
The crew Motorfall Fest director who was like kind of weird, and then they were like zooming in on his face. They had the Far Cry Blood Dragon TV show guy from Netflix come up, and he was like cracking some jokes, and then they wanted to show the trailer, but it did not work, so he had to continue talking. Stuff like that happened, and it was kind of weird where they were showing big games for the first time, and then it really felt like there was a sort of disconnect between like the people who, the person who was like kind of directing the event was like, okay, in between, we don't have to show the trailer that much. We have to show the presenter as well. But yeah, you're watching that stream for the gameplay. So sometimes it was like, well, we get new gameplay for, I don't know, Avatar or whatever. And then you would see the person talking. They would like cut away from the gameplay to this person. It was really, really bad. So I hope they fix that this year.
Yeah. No, it's the moment you said the Skull and Bones song, I immediately flashback. Yeah. It was like such an odd choice.
Of
all the things they could have done, like
yeah, I wanted to be in that meeting because it would probably be, we have Skull and Bones, and I think showing the game again and explaining it, people either know or don't care. So let's just get this band together, make this song, and I think I don't know who came up with it, but I think it was the best bet because it was a pretty nice song. And I do think people remembered it for it.
Yeah.
If they did like another trailer for it, that I don't know, would have not have worked. But
I don't really remember much of anything else from that presentation. So I guess it worked.
Yeah.
I guess it worked.
Yeah.
So they're doing another event, allegedly. That's what they're doing on June 10th. It's not allegedly. I mean, it's confirmed they're doing it live from LA. What they show is, I mean, we kind of know what they've got locked and loaded. It's just a matter of to what extent they showcase it. Of course, we talked last week about Star Wars Outlaws being rated by a Southern Korean ratings board, which historically happens within 3 months of release.
Yeah. 3 months at the latest, sometimes even 2 months. And it was actually last week also rated by the Australian ratings board. And now, again today, by the Brazilian, right? In Brazil, yeah.
There would be no reason for them to do this if they were planning on, like, a December release. This is very early for a December release rating. So it heavily suggests that they are looking for, like, end of June, maybe at the latest, early July.
At least at one point, because they have to send, I think, the full game over because these people are like putting a rating on it. So parents know, okay, this game includes, blood or whatever. Of course, for this game, that's not the case. But they did have the mini game. Did we discuss that last week?
I don't think so.
Because also in the trailer, let me look that up. Wait. So it had like some, they said, the rating said that it had some gambling elements, but that was for this mini game. So remember, of course, that every open world game nowadays has the Gwent equivalent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla had Orlok. Most recently, Final Fantasy Rebirth had Queen's Blood. Horizon had Machine Strike. All those sort of games where every village you go to, there are like some people's that are just sitting on a table and you can like, fight them if you want. Well, it seems like Star Wars Outlaws will have something like this as well. And it's actually a familiar game. Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah. I remember there was also like a scandalous thing around the time where there was like that debacle with Assassin's Creed Mirage with rating that popped early. And it said that it was rated like adults only in that initial trailer they showed. Was that last summer? Was that the same Ubisoft Forward event? It totally wasn't it?
It was around that time. When,
it was so weird because it got rated adults only for like gambling. And then they're like, no, that was a mistake. And they recut the trailer and everything. So it didn't show that. But everybody's like, that's such a weird mistake to make. Like, somebody had to intentionally put that rating on the game, and then we just had to, like, pretend it wasn't a thing. It was really odd. Oh, thank you, my babe. Thank you.
Luca's getting some delicious food.
Nikki delivered. She said, I made you what I'm eating. You get it? It's depressing. You're outrageous.
Now that I'm looking at it.
No, it's still awesome. I love it.
Looks
thank
good.
You. Thank you. So yeah, maybe there's something more interesting. I mean, if it is just a mini game that they're rating mostly off of, then that's one thing. But I mean, what did you find what you were looking for? Any specifics on it?
Yeah. Sabak, the mini game that we also saw briefly in the trailer real quick, because, I kind of forgot about that, but when doing one of my recent gaming news random videos that I post every Sunday, I actually looked at the recent trailers, and in the cinematic trailer, we see the main character actually play it. And that is like a mini game where you have to get... where you have like cards in your hands and you have to get the close to 23, but not go higher than that. And then you can kind of bet. So it's kind of like poker where you kind of bet, okay, I'm going to have the best cards here. And then you can probably do that against other NPCs in the world. So that's why the rating included the line saying there's a mini game with content of in-game betting and dividends. So
scandalous.
That's what they included. So that's pretty cool. Again, all these open world games have something like this these days, but we will have to wait and see if I'm losing hope, although it could still happen. Like, they could still, again, we talked about it before, 2 months is kind of like the new marketing cycle for these big games. It could totally be at the end of April they're like, big event, this is the gameplay, it's coming out end of June or something. But I'm leaning more towards September, I think. I think they maybe wanted to launch in May at one point, already gave the game to all these rating boards. They, did their rating. It's from start to finish, it's probably done. And now they're doing the finishing touch. And they're like, we have the time. We can delay it. And, of course, you're not really launching a game in July. That doesn't really happen that often. But I think like the Crew Motorfest launched in September, like that sort of window might be what they're looking for. But it's exciting, and that means that they can also promote it or use the Ubisoft Forward once again to promote it for like one final push with the release date and stuff. But I'm, of course, way more curious about the Assassin's Creed Red, because we can now say for certain June 10th is when we will... see gameplay probably for the game, because that's obviously how it usually goes. They have a big coming out party. We, for the first time, or just like Mirage, we know what the game is. Usually we don't know what the big setting will be, of course, apart from leaks, but Ubisoft would not have like announced it by this point. But of course that changed with the Assassin's Creed showcase in 2022, where they said, hey, we have Mirage, Red, and Hexay coming after that. That still means, though, like what they've been doing these last couple of releases has been cinematic trailer, screenshots, see you in a few weeks, gameplay trailer. So I think they're gonna do that again. So we probably get in May, early May, something like that, the big samurai. We're all like, whoa, this looks like Shogun, but it's a game trailer cinematic. Oh my god. And then we have some screenshots of the two characters doing some crazy moves, hiding in tall grass, killing some people,
putting out torches. Yeah, no, that's gonna
exactly.
Yeah, usually
like six of those screenshots, and then we get like the gameplay trailer either at the PlayStation showcase. If Sony has the deal, I can see that happen. Like, they need a game for their PlayStation 5 Pro, and they're not putting out a big game themselves. I could totally see them going to Ubisoft and being like, I think Red could probably look stunning on that system. So
they could have, but haven't they? I mean, for most of the stuff I can remember, Ubisoft typically partners with Xbox for stuff.
Origins was for Xbox One X, but Mirage was in the PlayStation Showcase last year, so maybe it was already like kind of looking ahead and like being like, okay, if you want Red, put Mirage in your showcase.
I agree,
as well.
They need something. So that
Syndicate
can make sense.
Syndicate was PlayStation as well. So they've been doing both, but most recently, like Valhalla was the big Series X game, for example. So
I'm really hopeful for it. I've been saying for like 6 months, I think 2024 could be potentially, hopefully, the start of a turnaround for Ubisoft, because they have a lot of potential. I think we all were, it's kind of a foregone conclusion that Skull and Bones would be what it was. But as for Star Wars Outlaws and Assassin's Creed Red, I think there's a good amount of optimism around those. A lot of people really like the look of Star Wars Outlaws. A lot of people are very excited at the prospect of an Assassin's Creed game finally set in this particular setting. So it's going to be very interesting to see if they can deliver on the hopes and dreams of so many players, because a lot's riding on it. I mean, they've taken a lot of time to put Red together, and there's a lot of eyes on it. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
It will, yeah, just be like Origins, one of the only games that has a 4-year development cycle. I think Unity was the other one. And those are really the games that Origins, of course, really tried something new. And yeah, Unity was also this big, especially graphical leap. So yeah, 4 years is kind of uncommon for Assassin's Creed games, but that is what we're moving into. Like Hexay will be, it kind of started at the same time as Red, probably, or like a little later. So that will be really the game where yeah, they had like the most time. But yeah, with them, of course, already being rumors of them like having an upgraded Anvil engine, so having to do a lot of the animations again, because that's always one of the critiques, that, yeah, they reuse a lot of those stuff. And it makes kind of sense for a big game like that. But when you play it, I usually don't really mind it that much. But always the first time you see a game, and you see, hey, what the heck? That's the same finisher as we saw in the previous game or whatever. Or, hey, they're moving and climbing kind of the same. I remember in the first Odyssey gameplay demo from Ubisoft Forth, they had an Anubis sword.
Oh, yeah.
like,
saw that.
Barnabas or something was like using an Anubis weapon. I'm like, what? Why are they using this weapon that I got for fighting Anubis in Origins? But they just like, they did not even like notice it. Like, they're, and I'm like maybe a little too much into all the weapons and all that sort of stuff, but it's of course kind of out of place. And then they later changed it for like a different weapon. And what was even crazier is the weapon they used in Odyssey for all the promotional images. Cassandra and Alexios have it in their hands in the box art. It was not obtainable in the game for the longest time. So they're like crazy stuff like that. But that's always it. That sort of stuff is always fun,
yeah,
to me. But I think, yeah, they're probably going to reset a lot of it. Like, I think probably the structure of the game, maybe the, hey, you're going to a camp, the open world, might still be like a relatively small evolution of Odyssey and Valhalla, but how we move through that world, how it will look, and yeah, the parkour, stealth moves and stuff, hopefully have seen a lot of improvements.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting this to be another, like, AC Origins leap forward, where, you know, Syndicate wasn't bad. It was pretty cutting edge for its time, too. But
still.
Yeah, still it looks, and the only real limitation is that it has, like, the dynamic lighting balancing thing that it does for the day-night cycle, or for the, like, daylight into interiors and out, is, like, a little wonky, so sometimes you get stuff that's really blown out. But other than that, I mean, Syndicate still looks and plays really well. But leaping from that to Origins was like, okay, this is a next-gen Assassin's Creed game. I see what we're doing. We're making some moves here. This is crazy. And I'm expecting this to be a similar thing, where I would expect a pretty significant leap. And that's been reported on by Tom Henderson with Insider Gaming, who's seen gameplay. And he's reported that it's a pretty sizable leap. It does not feel like Valhalla 2. I mean, it seems like this is going to be a pretty big step forward.
I do think we have to like set expectations right, though, because in terms of what we're hearing, in terms of the systems in the game, it does kind of feel more like Valhalla than I anticipated. Like, we still have a home base in this game, and I really thought they were going to step away from that, because that was one of the things I did not like from Valhalla. And I hope that even though they still have the home base, they still give us the quality of life features that made Odyssey so great. Like, in Odyssey, you could like change the look of your gear with Transmog anywhere in the world. In Valhalla, you always had to go back to the settlement. So I hope they give us those options. But it's kind of weird. That really is, once again, what we've also talked about before, how they're always introducing a new system and then not moving away from it, because we also had one LinkedIn post about naval stuff for Red, like that someone was working on like the naval part of Red. They put it in like their description, and that's once again like Origins only had the mounts they could sell and the weapons and the outfits. Then Odyssey added the naval stuff. Valhalla added the settlement stuff. So I think Ubisoft is like, we want to keep those things and probably add another element to it that they're gonna sell, or the fact that you now have two characters is enough for them. But that kind of makes me worried. Like, I don't need another settlement, but seems like we're getting it. So
yeah, it's probably, you know, they spend so much time and effort building these systems. It's kind of like it's kind of like Bethesda does something similar where, like, they'll introduce something through a DLC or a mod or something, and then it finds its way into the next game because they're like, well, we already built it, so, like, we're just going to do that. It would be really funny, for example, if, like, Elder Scrolls 6 had a, like, ship-building system but for, like, an actual boat, because they're like, well, we already built it for Starfield, so we'll just bring it over here.
Yeah, no, that's actually a good point. Yeah,
you know, it's very iterative.
And, like, the base building will tell, like, that's another great example from Fallout, of course, that they expanded upon in Starfield.
Yeah. And it just makes sense. Like, you build something, and then you can bring it over. It's a ton of content, and then you do a little bit of tweaks to it, and you can just, you know, build and tweak and build and tweak, and it allows for studios. I think it was Team Ninja, they were talking about this with Rise of the Ronin, where they were like, yeah, we're able to put so many games out pretty quickly because we do an iterative design process. Same with, like, From Software does the same thing, where each game is not really a huge leap. Like, you go from Dark Souls 3, I think, like, Sekiro was a very different game, so it felt like a leap.
Yeah.
But, like, even Dark Souls 3 to Elden Ring, for example, it doesn't feel mechanistically or graphically like a huge leap forward, but it's still an improvement. They took the core things they had done. They're like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Let's just take that and build upon it. And that's how a lot of the most successful devs do.
Sekiro had the more open levels already, which they, of course, took to the next level in Elden Ring to make it more open.
Yeah. So, and it's a very similar thing. I mean, even big studios where, like, you might feel graphical leaps, like a Naughty Dog, they are also doing iterative stuff and learning from each of their previous things. So, like, Uncharted 4 starts to experiment with bigger levels that have, you know, much more open maps, especially in, like, the Madagascar areas and Scotland. And then with The Lost Legacy, they experiment with a huge wide open level with a bunch of, like, choose your own adventure, kind of pick your path to choose where you start. And then they bring that forward to The Last of Us Part 2 with the big open Seattle place.
Yeah.
So this is very common in game development, but with Ubisoft, it can often feel like, okay, we're getting so iterative that, like you said, you know, you see weapons from Egypt in ancient Greece 1,000 years before, and you're like,
yeah,
what?
How is that? Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Totally. So, and for me, it will be very exciting to see that this is the Quebec team, and yeah, that with Valhalla and Odyssey being worked on at the same time, yeah, the Valhalla team could not really take a lot of learnings from Quebec and put them into Valhalla. And now, with them having also made Immortals, like, maybe the puzzles will be more interesting because of that. Like,
yeah, they'll have more dungeons or something.
Yeah, like that could totally be something we see. So I'm really looking forward to it. Again, June 10th is when we probably know the new name. I saw people in the chat discussing, like, will it be codenamed Red? No, it will probably have a completely different name. We will see that soon. I see Kieron in the chat as well. Since the Outlaws dev team is working on Division 3 after Outlaws is finished, what do you think the Avatar team is doing next? I asked Luke, and he said you might have an idea.
Yeah, I passed that buck.
Wanted to... yeah. No. So, of course, like, Division 3 is going to, like, they're going to work on that after Outlaws is out. So they announced it in September last year. So they're taking their time. But I think, personally, like, the Avatar team is probably still doing the DLC, of course, for that. Like, that's totally another thing we will see at the Ubisoft Forth. And then I would argue that they are just going to help with Division 3. I don't think they're going to do another game. I mean, Division 3, if they are going very ambitious, like, that game will need a big post-launch. So maybe the Avatar team is helping with the development, like, speeding that up. Because, again, if they are just starting after Outlaws is out, so we speculated maybe that will be June or September, then it will be a while before Division 3 is out. And how long can they keep the Division going with 2 that still gets updates? They have the mobile game, of course, and whatever's happening with the Heartlands free-to-play game. They have a lot of stuff in the pipeline, but what will the Division franchise look like when 3 is ready. So maybe putting more resources into that will speed things up. So I personally think they're just going to help with Division 3. I don't think they're going to do something else. They're at least not going to make another Avatar game. That game did not sell very well. And I think you said once that that they might not be really happy with how that worked out working with Disney. And again, them already announcing Division 3, even before they know what the success of Outlaws will be, I think also shows that that team just wants to work on their own thing again.
Yeah. And I mean, it says a lot that they're working on this game, Star Wars Outlaws, that has a lot of potential. And I think could be very, very successful if it lives up to what they've shown off. But there's certainly some questions because they're not even considering moving on to a sequel right away. I mean, they're like, nope, Division 3, that's what we're doing. And maybe they hand it off to another team. You know, if it is, let's just say it blows up and it's like way better than anybody expected and it's game of the year and whatever else. If that situation happens, then I'm sure they go, Disney calls them and they try to find a way to do a sequel or something. But they've already made it clear Ubisoft Massive probably is not going to be doing it for years and years. So it probably just shows that there was there's a lot more headaches involved with this than we might be seeing on the outside. I'm guessing, especially after the event we got to go to for Avatar. Of course, they couldn't say anything directly, but I got the vibe that working with Lightstorm and working with Disney and Fox and everything is just very intense, and there's a lot of hand holding and there's a lot of hoops to jump through, and it's just easier when you can just do your own thing. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they're just burnt out on it after all this time.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you also to Kush for the super chat over on YouTube. To my favorite YouTubers, cheers boys. Will Outlaws escape Ubisoft's open world tropes? I don't know, what do you think? Do you think that Outlaws is as good as people are hoping it is? Do you think it lives up to the hype? Or do you think it's just more of the same?
It's interesting because it is not like it is a game from the Division 2 team. So like they have been making different types of, like Division 2 still has some open world elements. But overall the structure of that game is of course quite different from the regular open world games. I hope so, because Outlaws started way later than an Avatar that of course was really similar to a Far Cry and the older Assassin's Creed games, which was also one of our critiques that, yeah, it just did not really try a lot. It was just like, okay, now we have that formula, but in the Avatar world. I really hope they try some different things. We already saw, for example, one of the elements where if you, for example, have a mission where you can go in stealth or, yeah, guns blazing, that it will impact your stance with that faction. And that you can really make choices that should also impact things. We, of course, have seen choices in the Assassin's Creed games, but not on that level with, like, factions and stuff. So maybe they can really push that to a new level. I think also the fact that instead of having this huge open world, it's more like planets will already feel kind of interesting, where instead of the... So every planet will be basically their new biome, but they can also on that planet introduce a lot of new enemies, new systems. So with like space travel, I think that this game, even though it might include some icons or some elements that we are familiar with, it will still feel probably very different. And from what we heard, like this is really more of a next gen first game, like they're really the first one with the Snowdrop engine, while Avatar maybe was first, like also worked on for PS4. We don't know. Like that game, again, was in the works for a very long time. That, it might also feel like seamless in terms of, you're taking off with your spaceship, bam, you're in space without like a Starfield loading screen, for example. So I think those things will already help this game make it feel kind of new. I'm not sure what you think.
Yeah, I mean, just from the gameplay preview that we've seen, it feels very different. Like, you know, the moment we saw gameplay of Avatar, everybody's like, okay, so it's Far Cry with Smurfs. That's what we're doing. And, you know, we see Assassin's Creed trailers and it's like, okay, there's more Assassin's Creed. We see Far Cry trailers and we're like, oh, yep, Far Cry. With this, it didn't look like your standard Ubisoft game. I mean, and I'm kind of glad that it doesn't, because it would have been really easy for them to just like, okay, you can free climb in this too, like on any surface. And then we also have all of these like base building mechanics or settlement systems and stuff. And we didn't get to see any of that stuff. So maybe it's in the game somewhere, but instead what they showed was something much more, I think, in line with like a Jedi Survivor style game, which not just because it's Star Wars, but because it seems like you have broader planets that you can travel to and explore that are each their own kind of setting and place. They're probably going to take nods, of course, from The Division, from Far Cry in some instances, but it seems different. To me, it doesn't seem like they're leaning into the same tropes and just trying to do the same thing over again, which excites me because it's different. Yeah. Maybe it ends up going poorly because, like with Avatar, I've used it as a reference many times because I think it's a good indication of how trying new things isn't always the best thing. Because like when I asked them what the core mechanic they thought that was going to really make or break Avatar was, the game director told me that it was the cooking system. And when we played the game, the cooking system was like one of the worst parts of the game that just didn't click. It just didn't really work very well. And it was like, okay, they tried something different, tried to tie all gameplay back into the cooking system, but it just didn't work very well. So that core design decision just didn't pan out. So maybe we run into similar issues with Star Wars Outlaws, but at the very least, it's something fresh. It's something a little bit different. And I think based on the response we've already seen, people are about it. People are really excited for it. So something to keep
an eye on. Mean, it's always like with the first gameplay they show, they obviously leave a lot to our imagination. And right now our imagination is kind of filling in the blanks, and that is all positive. But the moment we get like our hands on the game or like an extensive gameplay, like what does actually sitting down to play this game, like this was obviously a very scripted part. Like what does actually, clearing a planet, for example, like getting all the all activities done, what does that look like? I think that will give us a great idea. But yeah, we should just maybe expect a similar kind of open world game in the Star Wars universe, but with very cool next gen features in terms of it looks amazing. The flying seems very fluid, like no loading screens, etc. But we have not seen anything that indicates to me that the open world will have like a ton of really cool surprises or whatever. It could just be, hey, go to this, I don't know, activate this radar over here too. I don't know, we will see.
Climb this tower.
Let's not have so. And then the main character will be like climbing a tower again. But the other things we might see at the Ubisoft Forward, so we talked about Red and Outlaws. Prince of Persia The Lost Crown is of course getting DLC, so we could, they're doing story DLC, I think, at the end of the year. Yeah, totally could be there. Avatar DLC, they're doing 2 packs. I would be shocked if 1 pack was not out before June, but we will see. I mentioned Division Heartland, whatever's happening with that game, free to play. Division more survival, they're kind of like dumbing down the RPG elements for that extraction-based shooter. And we will probably get updates on already announced games like Skull and Bones, X Defiant, that's is chugging along and seemingly not doing too great inside with a lot of like toxic workplace, sadly, as Tom Henderson reported on. Seems like some people are kind of running that studio while other developers are having a hard time kind of giving their input and stuff, which sucks to hear. And Rainbow Six Siege will obviously be there as well. Now, the Splinter Cell remake, do you think we will see that? That will start it after Far Cry 6 in 2022, like it's the Far Cry 6 team, Ubisoft Toronto. So they had, or was Far Cry 6 in 2021? It was 2021, I think. Right?
Yeah, I think so. Because it was after Valhalla. I would guess that's probably targeting 2025, though. And if Ubisoft really is leaning into this shorter marketing cycle, I doubt that they reveal it a year ahead of time.
I mean, we already did. I think it's like, for a remake, I do think you have to, like, you're really focused on a particular audience, I think. It's not like, and it's like bringing Splinter Cell back. I think a trailer or whatever could not hurt if it's for this financial year, because they've been working on it for 3 years at the end of this year. Do you want to work way longer on a remake like that? Kind of, it kind of gives me Dead Space remake vibes. Yeah. I think that game also had the similar development cycle. And I think what they did for that game was actually kind of cool. They really showed it a ton and let a lot of like really hardcore fans talk about, yeah, or give them feedback and stuff like that. Maybe they're doing that internally as well, but I really think because again, I think 2025 also makes more sense, but it could be early 2025, right? I think that's a perfect February or March game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we have not heard about it since the sort of reveal, and they did like, I think, an anniversary stream where we saw some concept art, but I wanted to throw it out there. We might see it.
Yeah.
I think it would kind of get like, 2025 is looking crazy. So and they have Far Cry, Ghost Recon, all that sort of games, Assassin's Creed multiplayer. Like, they have a lot of stuff in 2025 already.
Yeah.
So yeah, we might see it. Assassin's Creed Jade, we talked about it, like the mobile game, of yeah. course. But that has seemingly been delayed. So maybe they're skipping. That would be like kind of a red flag if it's not at the Ubisoft.
Yeah, that'd be really weird. Boss.
Yeah.
If anything, Wild I would boss expect boss them here. To like shadow drop it at E3, like download it now or something like that.
That would be huge. But we kind of heard that Tencent is kind of moving away from it, or at least putting more effort into their Fall Guys sort of ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we will see. And we heard from Tom Henderson that next to Far Cry 7, so the regular open world single player and probably co-op game, they're also doing an extraction based shooter in the Far Cry universe. And that was planned for spring 2025. So this would then technically be the final Ubisoft Forward where they can show it. They wanted to do alpha tests and stuff like that this year already. So I would not be surprised if we... I mean, I do think having that, like announcing that before Far Cry 7 is smart. Otherwise, yeah, the spotlight kind of, like a lot of people would be like, oh, I don't care about the multiplayer game. But if this is like the first time they show Far Cry on the Snowdrop engine, next gen only, that could maybe get like that could get me, who normally doesn't really play these online games, interested to at least try to see how it feels, because I know Far Cry 7 will probably feel similar.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah,
timing
it might
for
be delayed.
Important. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, they got a lot, and of course, Just Dance. We probably get an extended, awkwardly long reveal for that, because that's classic. It's like they always find a way to do like a 10-minute segment on Just Dance, and everybody's like, who's watching this show? And it's like, finally, the Just Dance section. Like, I don't know, but there's got to be somebody, because they keep doing it for like a decade. They've been doing it. So yeah, they've got a lot of stuff lined up. They're doing this during Summer Game Fest, so they're gonna try to target, you know, the same time frame as everything else is happening with Jeff Keighley's event. The fact that they're doing it on June 10th, which is part of the Summer Game Fest thing, would suggest to me that they potentially have stuff for press and media to see in person. So
like last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would guess that they probably have some stuff to let people get their hands on, but time will tell. Time will tell.
I mean, last year, Mirage was not playable. They showed like the gameplay demo of like infiltrating the base. And then if you were in LA, you could see them actually play it in front of you. And they showed like, okay, this is what we showed during Ubisoft Forth, but you can actually also take a different approach and go away with a boat or something. So if that's it, again, for me, everything red will be interesting to cover as well. But I'm not sure if it's like worth it to fly out for like them not even letting me play. While at the previous E3s, I was the only one who finished the AC Odyssey demo at E3. That was like huge. That was like 7 hours or something.
Jesus.
I was able to sit there, play everything.
Like, and, please leave, sir. You're like, no.
Yeah, yeah. And I was able to like romance one of the characters, like the Kira, who which of course also in the main game.
You just
but
start
yeah, everyone else only had like an hour to play.
That's why it's like when I was at the Avatar event, I don't think they realized, but they let me, because like I played it, you're supposed to play for like whatever it was, 45 minutes, an hour, I don't remember. But it was like not a hugely long period of time to play. But they had me do that, and then they wanted to do like a little interview thing with me with the camera crew. So they pulled me away, and then like my demoist got distracted, went and did something with somebody else. And then like, okay, we're all done, thank you. And then I went back and sat down and kept playing. So I just kept playing until they told me to stop. And sometimes that happens where it's just like somebody wasn't paying that much attention. You're just allowed to keep
going. I was also like going there with like creators who were more like sort of the vlogging content. So their whole deal was that there was also like a sort of, I don't know, sort of attraction or thing that they could do to put in their vlog, right? So I don't know, a Jeep or something they could ride around in. I don't know what they were doing. And I was like, I don't care about that. Can I just play? Because I actually am here for the game. And they're like, sure.
Like,
I mean,
what?
Why not? It's like, yeah.
You Wait, don't want to sit in our game? Decorated Jeep?
Yeah. What the heck? I mean, I can take photos of that as well. So that was kind of nice. And I hope that's possible this year as well. But they will probably, if they have the game playable, do like the regular streaming events that we can play at home as well. I'm sure of that, but
time will tell.
We'll see. That will be interesting in a few months. We will probably have played it.
Fingers crossed. Don't worry, guys, if we're allowed to tell you we're going, we'll tell you. As of right now, it's still a tad early. My understanding is they haven't sent out or haven't started inviting people to the
did you not get anything?
Fest. Oh, crap. So it's still a tad early, but we're gonna do our best. You better believe it.
I'm only gonna go if you can't. No.
I don't want to be there with you. Yeah, let me know if you're going so I know not to.
I mean, a podcast a week is already enough for me, like spending time in LA together.
Yeah, Luke, yeah. You drain me. Oh man.
No, of course not. That would be actually kind of exciting, but we will see what happens. So to round out the Ubisoft Forward thing, June 10th again, we will of course be covering it. And Summer Game Fest E3 season, it's coming up. Then real quick, not sure if you saw this, there's another Prince of Persia game coming, but by the Dead Cells developer Evil Empire. It should be called The Rogue of Prince of Persia, or The Rogue Prince of Persia actually, and it will launch in early access on Steam and marks Ubisoft's first day one Steam release since 2019. This is all from Insider Gaming, and hopefully that means that Assassin's Creed Red will also be on Steam, because the Assassin's Creed games did very well on Steam. And they of course kind of, like, for Ubisoft it was kind of nice, or like they had an extra incentive to go for the Epic deal, because they could still sell their games through the Uplay or Ubisoft Connect launcher, and they would get 100% of the money, of course, from that. So they were like, yeah, let's go for Epic, get that paycheck, and then also do Ubisoft Connect. But still, they are missing out, of course, on Steam sales, because the Assassin's Creed games were pretty big. They did launch the Valhalla and stuff later on Steam. Mm-hmm. But
we'll see.
Maybe they're going back. But this roguelike game should get constant free updates. And it should look like the Franco-Belgian comics. I'm not sure if you're familiar with those.
No.
It's like, what's the English name for Kuifje? The Adventures of Tintin. So that's a kind of interesting art style.
Yeah, I can share this on screen for everybody real quick if I go like full screen. Yeah, The Adventures of Tintin, if I do, where's a good reference photo? I mean, it's just stuff like this. So that's going to be interesting. Interesting art style to pick.
Yeah. And again, Dead Cells, the developers, those guys are great. So, we will keep an eye on that. That will probably be another announcement at the Ubisoft Forward, I would have to bet. And they're going for the early access approach, which of course also kind of new for Ubisoft for these single player games. So,
Well, there you go.
Did you see Eternal Strands?
I did. This is a game you were talking about last week.
Yeah.
And then it happened. It actually occurred. We actually got gameplay. Tell people what this is. I'll put it on screen for everybody to see.
Yeah, so this is the new game from Mike Laidlaw, the ex-BioWare BioWare creative director working on the Dragon Age series, and also in 2020, a lot of Ubisoft Quebec developers, so Immortals and Syndicate and Odyssey developers, left to form their own studio, Yellow Brick Games. And they're now finally, after 4 years, revealing their first project, and it's called Eternal Strands. And you kind of have to think of, if you're listening and have not seen this, Immortals, Phoenix Rising graphics, but kind of gameplay inspired by Shadow of the Colossus. Like, you're fighting these huge 25-meter-high creatures, and you're climbing them as well. And, of course, we played a lot of Dragon's Dogma, so we have been preparing for this. you're playing a weaver named Bryn, and you use kind of magical abilities. So, for example, if you want to build a bridge, you have this ice power, and then you kind of build a bridge. But you can also, of course, use that ice power in combat. They showed kind of a Tears of the Kingdom type, or even I think it was also in Breath of the Wild, the sort of magnet ability where you can like kind of throw enemies or objects at enemies. So they kind of use that as well, and it seems like they are kind of using those magical abilities for puzzles but also for combat. You have, of course, different weapons. And yeah, again, the veteran developers, also the Assassin's Creed Syndicate composer is doing the soundtrack, which, of course, really awesome, because the soundtrack in that game was really, really good. Out next year for PS5, Xbox Series, and a PC, and totally look up the trailer if you're interested. But it's really giving Immortals vibes. And that makes sense for the developers that are working on it. And I actually found this because back in 2020, like I said, the Mike Laidlaw, again, the ex-BioWare creative director working on Dragon Age, was working at Ubisoft on a King Arthur fantasy RPG, but it was canceled by Ubisoft. So that's why they all left and were like, okay, if Ubisoft doesn't want to make it, we're gonna do it ourselves. And that was described as a big budget adventure involving stories of King Arthur and his round table in a sword and sorcery fantasy world full of knights and legends. And it was kind of like described as a cooperative multiplayer world similar to Capcom's popular Monster Hunter series. Mm. So you really see that they have taken a lot of those elements and have now applied it to this new IP. Again, they're really, really interested in fighting huge creatures. Only this seems to be single player instead of co-op. And the reason why they delayed it, this was still when Ubisoft has like one person and like a group of other sort of executives that could really, I think it was like the creative team or whatever they called it. And you had Serge Heskovitz, if I pronounce it right. He was the chief creative officer, and he said, if it was a fantasy game, it had to be better than Tolkien. Otherwise, they're just not doing why start a fantasy project? And I think we discussed it before. Like, it makes sense looking at Ubisoft's catalog. They don't do a lot of fantasy games. Like, even Immortals is the closest we kind of got, but that is still based on the Greek mythology, of course. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're just weirdly afraid to touch it. They just don't want to. Like, we'd rather do the 15th game where you blow up purple crystals. That we're okay with, but fantasy, get out of here. It seems interesting. And, I mean, this is a team that seems very passionate about the project. And there seems to be a lot of dynamism here. I mean, the sort of ice, for people listening, the ice ability that Jor referenced, where you're able to like build bridges with it or create restraints for the monsters and trip them with it. It's very similar in look to like the like glue gun in Prey, if you remember that, where you can kind of craft bridges with it. So things like that and tools like that, also the kind of magnetic ability to move objects and place them different places, I think that could lead to really cool exploration where you can kind of craft your own solutions and ways and routes to places that you want to find and explore. That's all super cool. Very intriguing to me. Definitely one to keep an eye on. And it's from a new studio that's trying something original, and that's awesome. We need more players. Yeah. We need more devs in the industry.
It's like a small team, I think 68 developers, Unreal Engine 5, so some people in the chat already talk about that, and yes, it is. So I hope they have like realistic expectations for this. Like, I don't expect this to be like a multi-million seller. There's of course a reason why Immortals did not get a sequel, sadly. While for what it ended up being, it was still, I think, pretty popular. I hope they have like the right expectations, and if they sell like a million copies, that would already be a success for them.
Yeah.
But we will see. I hope it actually succeeds. We have not heard anything about the story yet. That's of course, one of the things that this game could kind of excel at, where I think Immortals kind of fell flat. They did not really take that seriously. We will follow it, probably see more during Summer Game Fest. Now, speaking of Summer Game Fest, again, we're really in that preview period. PlayStation Showcase. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
At least according to Jeff Grubb. And Jeff Grubb is almost always right. So, he now heard a bunch of times that either a PlayStation Showcase or State of Play will take place in May. And he then later on Twitter actually said, I'm leading more towards PlayStation Showcase. And that's, of course, what we saw last year as well. Now, to be fair, not sure if you remember, but last year, PlayStation Showcase felt more like a longer State of Play. Like, they did not really have the big hitters.
It really ticked a lot of people off, yeah.
Yeah, fair games. And those were kind of Concord, Marathon. Those were kind of the big new PlayStation reveals. Of course, Metal Gear Solid 3 was nice. Seeing Mirage there was kind of a surprise. But again, for a PlayStation Showcase, looking at the ones we got earlier in the generation, where they revealed Horizon, Spider-Man Miles Morales, Ratchet & Clank, Demon's Souls, God of War Ragnarok, like, you expect those titles, but we did not see them. Although, I think this year, we have a bigger shot at them with a Ghost of Tsushima 2 probably being there.
I think they, hopefully, they took the feedback from last year, and they're like, okay, people have expectations for full-on showcases that we do. They want to see first party stuff. They want to see what we've been working on. We can't just come in with third party stuff and act like it's just a rebranded, Treehouse Live. We got to do something a little bigger. And I agree. I mean, they've got a lot of pots on the stove, a lot of devs that have been quiet and working on their stuff, doing their thing. We've got Sony Bend, we've got Naughty Dog, which has been working on something for a while, on the side next to the online game, which is now canceled. You have, of course, Sucker Punch, Guerrilla, their live service game, which I think we both agree they should be really pushing to get that out before, like, middle of next year.
Probably not gonna happen, but
like, if that goes head to head with Monster Hunter, it's gonna be a tough sell for Monster Hunter fans who will just play Monster Hunter. So we'll see how that does, but they've got a lot of stuff that they could show. They only really need one like big trailer to make everybody go, okay, that's right, they have some cool stuff they're working on, okay, we're okay.
Yeah, they need more, I think, after last year and the sort of, like, we are really after Spider-Man in this period where we know Wolverine, but thanks to the Insomniac League we learned that that's 2026, so that's far out. So what is happening, like, we know this year. Like, I hope that even though they said, of course, we won't have any big AAA God of War or Spider-Man type titles before April 2025, that they're basically have some surprises, like an Astro Bot has been talked about. That would, of course, be kind of nice. But also, like Spider-Man 2 DLC, that also with the recent death. Did you know that the sort of dev menu was added with the recent Spider-Man update for like a brief moment?
Oh, no.
No, you could like with the new game plus update.
Oh, if the
you
did dev. Like, oh, the dev menu.
The
yes.
dev. Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so they patched it out real quick. But if you did that during on at the title screen, you could go to yeah, you could like E3 demo. You could like really see the menu they would use when press would get come over, and also like internally for hey, let's jump to this mission, and they could also see like a. I'm not gonna spoil it for people who don't want to know, but DLC blah blah blah, and then you could click on it and you would see like the whole all the different missions for the DLC. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're cooking, they're doing something, and that would of course be a cool and it's out now reveal. What is like, I mean, I would argue that the new game from Bluepoint, of course, the studio behind the Demon's Souls remake, they've been working on something for a long time. Like that's probably not on the same level as God of War Ragnarok. Maybe they can have that ready, right?
Yeah,
that would be kind of cool. So I hope they at least have some surprise for 2024. That I think would really help, and then show that one or two Ghost and maybe the Horizon Online game are coming next year.
Yeah,
I think it would already make some people happy. And then maybe tease, what is Corey Barlog working on? We know that he, after God of War 2018, has been working on a new IP. Like, he is not really credited in Ragnarok more. It's like a supervisor. So what's up with that? And yeah, we kind of have more like Neil Druckmann, of course. Sure, he has been working on the TV show, but really since 2020, they of course have been doing the online game, but Naughty Dog is really big. We know that they have been working on multiple single player games as well. And yeah, like showing that would restore some faith in the studio that we're like, okay, yeah, next to the, because it, the next announcement probably is going to be part two for PC, and then we're in that cycle again, right? Where this generation they've only launched remakes and ports. So
yeah, I think like if we got one big reveal and then it's a bunch of like fair games, another trailer for that, and then a trailer for Concord or whatever else. Like I think if they had one big mic drop moment at the very end where they showcase like whatever Corey Barlog's been working on, or you know, The Last of Us Part Three, whatever it is, I think that big mic drop would be enough that people would shut up. I think that they could blow people away if they had more than one thing to show. I don't think like a Spider-Man DLC or something makes many people
happy. It's not enough.
Happy.
No.
I don't think that's
enough.
But
it could be like something they at least have in the near future. That was more what I was like talking about.
Yeah.
Where right now it's kind of quiet. Like obviously they of course made the deals for Rise of the Ronin, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and Stellar Blade. But after that, there's really nothing for PlayStation. So what's happening this year? Showing some small things. I would like, I think, like, realistically, we're looking at Ghost 2 at the end, like, something we know, but still seeing that announced will be exciting. But I hope they go more for that next levels type PlayStation showcase we've seen before, where they start with Ghost of Tsushima 2 and then end with the Corey Barlog game or the Naughty Dog game or whatever. I think that would really shut, like you said, everyone up. Mm. Only showing Ghost 2 would be like, cool. But we also kind of expected it. And yeah, I actually think showing Ghost 2 will probably mean that Red won't be shown there. That would be kind of weird having both games.
Yeah, I agree.
In the same showcase.
I'm really excited for it. I mean, they have the opportunity to really blow people away and amaze them, because the big kind of narrative for the last year has just been that, okay, so Sony is kind of hitting a lull with their first party single player stuff. They're putting a lot of eggs into the basket of live service. And I mean, that was kind of what pissed people off the most, I think, with last year's showcase, is that it wasn't that they just didn't have, like, they had games to show, but they were games that basically nobody wanted except marathons. People got excited for Marathon, but pretty much everything else they showed, like fair games, looked like garbage. And Concord, who knows what that game's like? Like, we don't really know anything about it. You know, they had stuff to show, but it wasn't stuff people cared about or were that particularly interested in. And even, you know, Marathon was like, okay, sometime in the future, we'll get it to you. Like, I think whatever they said, 2025 is what they're shooting for. So I think it just reflected that they had priorities that were not in line with what the community and what the gamers wanted. And that pissed people off the most. So if they can remind everybody that they have that single player stuff, that, you know, sure, they had Naughty Dog working on an online game for a while, but they're also working on this other stuff too. I think that would quell a lot of concerns and fears very quickly.
100%. Yeah. And of course, third party stuff will help us see Jaden talk about Silent Hill 2. Like, that is really one of the games that seems to be kind of locked. Metal Gear 3, the remake, also was kind of mentioned. It's like a 2024 game. So showing that again with like a release date would also, of course, be big. And yeah, maybe they will have the, I don't know, Borderlands 4 reveal, like something big like that. Or tease Dragon Age already that we know BioWare will talk about in the summer. So I think it could be a pretty big show. Usually Sony does them in May to kind of get ahead of Xbox and of all the other games that will be shown and give like a stage to big third-party games as well.
Yeah.
So,
and who knows? I mean, maybe they still do something in July or something like that to do a deeper dive onto something. But I agree. Like, they have an opportunity here to win a lot of people back over and remind them that they've been cooking. They just need to actually show stuff.
Yeah. And it's like, really the year where, or it's kind of like this, the first time I feel where the PlayStation 5 is kind of like on a downwards trend in terms of sales. Last year, it was really available to the masses for the first time. And now it feels like you can just buy the console and people are still doing it, but it is like not at the level that they want it. So what the strategy for the PS4 always was greatness awaits. Like, hey, there's a ton of big stuff coming. Like, we know Death Stranding 2, of course, will also probably show up. So yeah, they really have to hit it home, and I think they will. And I hope also for titles like you mentioned, Concord and Fair Games, that maybe we see gameplay and they're like, whoa, it's actually cooler. Because yeah, it's still like the people working on Fair Games are like really some like veterans on big Ubisoft games, also Assassin's Creed. So would kind of suck if they are basically like ex-Deviant making that.
It was funny. Well, one of the top comments on the Fair Games trailer is just somebody that said, you can take the devs out of Ubisoft, but you can't take the Ubisoft out of the devs. It was like,
oh, wow. That's actually kind of good. That's really good. Yeah. Sony was like, we're not going to buy Ubisoft, but yeah, we still want Ubisoft. So yeah, let's buy these folks.
Yeah, why not?
Maybe we get like the Suicide Squad season 2 trailer as well. I mean, they still.
I mean, there are rumors. There was a data miner that did some digging, and he said that there was a good amount of evidence that they are kind of frantically rearranging the release schedule of some of this stuff. So they have like their season set up. He said, you know, originally the game was slated for release, well, 2 years ago, but then last year was the other time. So like season 2, I believe, was originally lining up around the like fall winter season. So it's all like all themed around like Halloween and snow and all of that. And so they're having to like rearrange seasons and try to make it line up better with the seasons of the real world. And they're also, I think, realizing that the biggest complaint is that there's just no content with the game. I mean, you have to grind to get the Joker. And some people are like, well, if you do this one mission over and over and over and over again, and you just swing around and shoot these particular robots that have their XP calculation bugged, you can actually grind him out in like an hour and a half. I was like, is this supposed to make me feel better? Like, what? So it's like you get the character after grinding for however long. Then you have the Joker, and you can just play the same missions over and over again you've already been playing. It's just there's not content there to keep players coming back. So either they have content substantial and substantive content that they can bring in future seasons that they're going to try to bring forward and expedite, or there just isn't anything and they just honestly don't have more content and the game is what it is, in which case it doesn't matter how quickly they pump these out. No. It's dead. Like,
already. I think they are going at least trying to do like a one last push to get more money out of it with that offline mode and the Arkham season. I think that's kind of their last sort of bet. But it's not great. I wanted to stream it as well, wanted to play it as well, but I was like still doing Dragon's Dogma and I was like looking at your stream a bit and other people, and the fact that they said Joker was free and then asked $10 for it, or a grind is, wow.
Yeah, it was just, they had a chance to show some like goodwill and be like, okay, everybody get him. There's not a lot of content, but at least here you can have him and play with him.
Yeah.
You know, because we love you guys for supporting the game. And after all that, they had the chance to do it, and they chose instead to charge for it or lock it behind a grind.
Yeah.
And it just was really unfortunate because it left the community feeling like, okay, so you're just trying to grab the money and run. Like, this is one last-ditch effort to make a little bit of cash and then bail. That's what it felt like. Whether that's what they intended it to be or not, that's what it felt like, and that's what they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. We will I don't know if we will see. Maybe that's the end. It really feels like, I mean, we did, of course, do a prediction last week. I think you were right.
You're very close. I believe my number, I expected it to peak at like 1,700. I think you said 3,500, and the peak and was like under 3,100. Yeah, it was like 3,060 something, I think. Like 3,068 or something.
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
Yeah, 3,000, yeah, 42, I see.
42, that was close.
Yeah, and it's now back to 900. Oh my god. I see some people asking like if I've been keeping up with Helldivers 2. I also from the sideline, like, that game is just I don't know. I've just been playing like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, of course, that came out like I got that game around the time that Helldivers came out or a little later. So I sadly have kind of missed the boat, but I'm just fascinated by how they're doing a live service game, and I really hope that more games are taking note, like how they're doing the community events where people, even though you're only in a small group, feel like you're playing together, and the moment you win or unlock something new, they're already teasing the next thing or new enemies. Like Destiny does not have any new enemies since their launch. Like, if you really sure, they did some recallers, they added some enemies that did like new abilities, but their models are the same. Really, Destiny 1 had 4 enemy factions, and they're still a thing in Destiny 2. And if you look at Helldivers, them adding new flying machines and bugs and stuff like that at a rapid pace, like, I think the sort of... I can imagine, for a game that I actually would like, playing it and then suddenly seeing new enemies while you never heard about them before, it kind of really creates this sort of real-world news cycle, and you kind of see that on the internet as well, where people are like, did you see that? And then it kind of, it's like it creates their own marketing moments instead of having this press release or having this blog post with, on this day these new enemies are dropping. I think that is like very, very smart of them to do.
Yeah,
and I hope more games will do it. And it kind of reminds me of Assassin's Creed kind of sometimes had it as well, where sometimes they accidentally added things that were not ready, but they also, I'm not sure if you remember the sort of bow in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, where you had to hit a rock with the Excalibur for the bow to appear. In true Ubisoft fashion, there was a glitch that we figured out so we could get the bow, but then we knew the bow was there, but we did not know that you actually had to use the Excalibur at sundown and do the sort of thing. But it really reminds me of that, like, players are discovering cool new things, and that creates its kind of own moment, and then the developers kind of react to that.
Yeah.
So I think it's fascinating.
It's just relying on word of mouth to do the marketing for you. I mean, like, they just did this big update for Helldivers, and basically they rebalanced a ton of weapons. They did a bunch of stuff to fix some problems, fix missions, and all sorts of things. And then players load into it, start playing it. And if you're watching with us, you can see this on screen, but I'll also describe it. Like, players just started playing and discovering this. This is from a user on Reddit, Constipation, with a K. Shout out to Constipation. He's just playing and finds a freaking AT-AT, like straight out of Star Wars is what it looks like, roaming the map, and then it gets aggroed on him and starts shooting at him. And this is like a whole new enemy type, enemy class of giant walker with crazy turrets and cannons and stuff that he just stumbled into. For most other games, this one enemy type that's brand new would be like a whole seasonal update. There'd be all sorts of events and
multiple trailers, yeah, like hyping it up. And now it's just, it's here, yeah, and you did not expect it.
Yeah.
And that's so cool. That's so cool.
It's wild. It's fascinating. And I think it's shown a lot of the stuff this year, both with Helldivers and Pal World, I think is showing a lot of these big companies, like, you don't have to spend millions on marketing to communicate to players that are very in tune with social media and everything, all the cool stuff that your game has to offer. As long as it's actually cool and players can find it, they'll find out about it. You don't need to spend millions on trailers or put stuff on TV or do a whole seasonal update just to release the cool new enemy type. If it's honestly cool, people are going to clip it. It's going to go viral on TikTok and YouTube Shorts and Twitter and everywhere. Everybody will know about it. You spent no money, and it's honestly kind of cooler because players are going to be like, oh, so if I'm just playing the game tonight, I could stumble into one of those things. That's awesome. And it's just totally reinvented it. And I hope more companies kind of learn that lesson, because it's also going to tighten up budgets, increase margins. I mean, you think about how much money they've spent marketing, like Suicide Squad, for example, and they're struggling to break 1,000 players. Meanwhile, Helldivers isn't spending hardly anything to communicate this stuff. They're, as far as I know, they're not spending any money to communicate these coolest updates and stuff with new enemy types. They're just doing it, and players are eating it up. So,
yeah. And it's like a very interesting way of doing a live service. Instead of the sort of, like, you really see the design philosophy behind Suicide Squad, where it's like, okay, we designed all these things to keep players busy, so we know hopefully they will stick around for the next season. Instead of the sort of model in Helldivers 2, it's more like a FOMO kind of model in a way where, or if you're kind of like out of it, you feel like you're maybe missing out because maybe this new enemy dropped, and you're constantly in the loop because you're like, okay, this is like actually a cool world to exist in, and you don't know what to expect. And yeah, you can, like, there are not a lot of these systems that feel like grindy and just designed to have you play 1,000 missions to get to this thing. And we know when the season 1 drops for the Joker, you get the image, and the same is for the other big live service games, the image with all the things. And that's probably it. And for Helldivers 2, they launched this patch, the patch notes, and they did not even mention these enemies or new weapons or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're still there. So I think that's really cool. I hope more games look at it. And I think they will.
Yeah.
But it's like such a cool, interesting contrast between a Suicide Squad that is doing it very old-fashioned way.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's very novel. It's exciting. It's different. And to me, it also kind of is this sign of, like, I've referenced it before with other games, but it's like this confidence in their design and in how the game works and functions, where they're like, no, players are going to find this and think it's badass. So we don't need to do trailers. We don't need to spend money, because they're going to find it. They're going to be in love with it, and they're going to share it with all their friends. And they're so confident that they don't even bother cutting a trailer or mentioning it in the patch notes. Like, they could have just mentioned new enemy, Walker, introduced into the game with this update. They don't even bother doing that, because they're like, players are gonna find it and they're gonna love it. Whereas a lot of these, yeah, other games, like you said, it's an old school approach where they have to have each thing bullet pointed. Each thing has been passed through 15 layers of bureaucracy to get approved, and then it goes through the marketing team, and they cut together all these trailers and graphics for it. And at the end of the day, there's still not that much content, but yeah, it's just,
it looks kind of good on the bullet points.
Yeah,
it looks to be a lot.
Yeah.
Strongholds. Let's do the strongholds yeah, in Suicide Squad. And they were just recolors of buildings that were already in the green.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, of course, this only works if your game is big and successful. Because I can see other games try this where you only have 1,000 players. And then I do get that the person who worked a few months on these new enemies that did not even get a trailer, then you might feel kind of bad if no one cares.
Yeah.
So then I get the fact that you want to have this trailer to highlight those things and want to convince people to try the game. But for Helldivers 2, they're riding this wave and they're keeping it interesting. And I think that's also a big contrast versus Pal World, where they were not ready for this. And then you see them drop, like, this, it felt like quickly put together trailer of like one world boss that you probably have, that you probably kill in 5 minutes, and that's their announcement, and then they're go quiet again for a long time. Like, it really it shows that it's not easy, and yeah, that what they are doing is interesting. And if this is a model Sony is going to use for their other live service games, could be good, or it could be, it could really show, whoa, Arrowhead is really something else.
I mean, what I fully expect to happen, or at least what they should do, is that we know that they were having Bungie executives and managers go around to all of the other studios working on live service games, and they evaluated them to try and see if they thought that they were going to drive enough like engagement with players over the long term. And that was one of the stories that broke with The Last of Us Online, is that Bungie devs did not feel that The Last of Us Online was going to drive player engagement for long enough. Basically, it wasn't going to work as well as a live service game should. So they had to delay it, take Bungie's notes under advisement, and kind of redesign everything. But what I would expect happens now is that with Bungie's problems, I don't think Bungie's getting the call. I think Arrowhead is. And if Arrowhead's getting the call, and Arrowhead's going around to fair games, and they're going over to see what Concord's looking like, their approach is going to be very similar to Helldivers. And they're like, no, just get a flood of content, make it cool, and then just drip it in slowly, and players will eat it up. You don't need to No, I was just going to say, like, you don't need to desperately try to sell it to people with 15,000 trailers. And that's the other thing that I think a lot of players just disconnect with, is the sort of desperation of having tons of marketing for your game and for a seasonal update and stuff. It's just like, hey, if it's good, you don't need 15 trailers playing on YouTube every video I watch. Like, just make it good and I'll try it and I'll have fun, you know?
Yeah. That's right. Although, like, we are very in tune, like a lot of people are not. So I do get the, for a game like Suicide Squad that has like a huge mainstream appeal as well, that they want to have these actors in this weird live action commercial run around, and that probably does make sense for them. But I do think a lot of these companies can learn a lot from Helldivers, because that game had a way smaller budget and is outselling and making way more money than maybe these big quadruple A games combined. So and that kind of brings us to the other kind of short news story I quickly wanted to touch on, that 60% of the playtime in 2023 went to 6-year-old or older games, new data from a Newzoo showed. And they kind of have this image here where we see games ranking in a top 10 by average monthly active users are over 7 years old on average, and generally falling into one of four categories. So basically, they're saying that even though 2023 was one of the best year for new releases, most of the new game, or most of the playtime per month, went to titles that were really old already. Basically, 60% of the playtime was spent in games that are 6 years old or older. And then they're, of course, talking about, for example, on PC, the top 10 goes like this: Fortnite, Roblox, Minecraft, Counter-Strike 2, and Go. Sims 4, that's pretty wild to see that up there so high. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, 3, and Warzone. Like, that's, of course, with the Call of Duty HQ, that's what Activision is kind of doing now. Like, they're putting everything together. I think that's what Ubisoft is going to try with Assassin's Creed Infinity as well. So even if you play Red, the multiplayer game, or Hexay or whatever, it will all be called Assassin's Creed Infinity, and then maybe it will show up in these lists as well. League of Legends on 7, Valorant on 8, GTA 5 on 9, and Rocket League on 10. Like, those were the most played games in 2023. On PlayStation...
Well, and what's stunning, just to point it out, like, in case you're listening, that the average years on the market for those 10 games is 9.6 years on the market.
That's
the
crazy.
Average age of those games is 9.5 years. That's insane. Like, that's crazy. Granted, some of these are like updated, like the Call of Duty Warzone 2.0 update, like that's newer, but games like Valorant, GTA 5, Rocket League, Roblox, Minecraft, like Sims 4, like these are very old games, and they're dominating most of the playtime. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy. What they also said is that more than half, it get worse. That's what Kotaku is writing. Of the 23% of playtime spent in 2023 on new games, so new games are even like divided as 2 years or younger, so not even like brand new games that launched in 2023. So more than half of the 23% of playtime spent in 2023 on new games was spent on big annual sequels like Madden or NBA. So, So it's like 11.5% of all the playtime in 2023 was spent on like actual games like a Diablo 4 or Baldur's Gate 3, while the rest is all spent on the same things. And some conclusions that I saw people take from this is like, okay, a lot of these companies created monsters and they're kind of competing. Like, it's very hard for a new property to do as well as these older games, because of course those older games already have an established audience and a lot of content versus a newer title. But also that, this might get worse over time, where maybe newer games are getting less important over time, because why put $300 million in a new game that has a low chance of succeeding? Maybe you can better spend it on an expansion for whatever live service game you have. But on the other hand, like, is this really different from 10 years ago? Like, I feel that it has always kind of been this case. Like, we are very, again, in tune with what is happening with all these new games. But if you look around you, like, there have always been people that were always playing only World of Warcraft, RuneScape, or FIFA, or Call of Duty. Like, that did not change. And again, CSGO, Dota, like, those titles have always been around and were always most played. And they're looking at monthly active users. Like, those games are competitive. They have constant new updates. It makes sense that Hogwarts Legacy is not nowhere to be seen here, because you can finish it in 20, 30 hours.
So, I mean, with a lot of this, I think it's just that live service games are inherently about building routines and habits. Like, the goal of a live service game is to become part of your weekly schedule. Like, you know, for me personally, Thursday nights, those are game nights with my like college buddies. So Thursday nights, we all hop on a co-op game or a game we can play together, like a Helldivers or whatever else. So like, we're part of this, we're part of the problem, but that's just what they're doing. Like, their goal is to build habits and routines with you, and they're successful at that. So there's no surprise that, for one, the monthly active users on all of the platforms, whether it's PC, PlayStation, Xbox, or Switch, top performer on all of them, Fortnite, full stop. Roblox is in the top five for the main three. I don't think it's actually on Switch. Maybe it is, I'm not sure. But,
and it's interesting because it only came out later on PlayStation, like pretty late in 2023, still number five.
Yeah. But it's just like, these games are about building massive communities and then keeping them engaged for long periods of time. And they're very good at it, which is why these guys make billions of dollars each quarter on these live service games. They just print money, but it's because there's so many freaking people playing them. It's outrageous. Like, it's hard to quantify when you think of like how big of a deal it was that Hogwarts Legacy outsold Call of Duty. Because like, even Call of Duty, like, Warzone is the most popular part of Call of Duty at the moment. And you can play Warzone for free. You don't need to buy COD to play Warzone. But even among that, the people that bought just like to get access to the multiplayer is still every year like the highest selling game of the year. And that's like half of the community of Call of Duty. It's outrageous, but it's why these games make so much money. It's just crazy how much money they make. I mean, I just Googled it. Let's see. Sakura estimates that Epic Games hit $5.7 billion in revenue of 2021 before declining 9% to $5.2 billion in 2022. Most of that, let's see. Yeah, Fortnite generated $4.4 billion in revenue in 2022. Just Fortnite.
Yeah.
$1 billion a quarter. That's
ridiculous. Yeah, that's
insane. All through cosmetics, like, and the battle pass.
It's that outrageous. Makes sense why everyone is chasing it, because like the profit is insane on those. And like $1 billion, that's not what a God of War makes. That's not what a Last of Us makes. Like, and those games cost a ton to make. Like, obviously, now I think Fortnite is also at the level where they're probably spending a few $100 million a year to keep that going. But yeah, the profit is way more. And for Fortnite, you know, okay, this season is gonna bring in probably X amount of money, while every single player game you release, even though it's a big franchise, you're always kind of fingers crossed, like, will it succeed? Will people spend the $70? Like, you always have to market to those people again, while, yeah, people are playing Fortnite for free. So, yeah, it's way easier to get those people if they're already in.
Yeah. It's, yeah, and I mean, these games just are pure profit once they get going and revved up, because you have a team that's making cosmetics, you have a team that's working on content updates and stuff, but there's just so much money. I mean, even if they're spending $500 million a year on Fortnite to keep it up and going, and there's server costs and stuff associated with it, sure, but even if we say $500 million, they're still making just under $4 billion in profit. It's outrageous. It reminds me of, you know, speaking of systems that get kind of turned into a well-oiled machine, there's the story a few weeks ago where an internal Valve study found that Steam employees, like, well, rather Steam, was making more per employee head than Facebook, Meta, you know, Apple, Microsoft, regardless of who you look at. They were generating $780,000 off of each employee, which is higher than like any other company. You look at Walmart. Yeah, they make billions. Walmart has like 100,000 employees or whatever they have. Like, yeah, it's outrageous. Yeah. But it's because these companies, it's all digital. Doesn't cost them much of anything to sell you 10 copies of a digital item versus one item of a digital item. So they can just print the money. It's crazy. But, oh man, yeah. It really makes sense why these big companies are chasing live service games, though, because you get one Fortnite, it can prop up a multi-billion dollar business by itself. Just one game and you're set. And so for a lot of these companies, they're willing to take a $300 million bet on something like a Suicide Squad. And if it flops, oh well, at least we tried. But if it's successful, it just prints money. It's crazy. The last thing,
and that's why they keep trying, but this study also shows like people have their game already. Like, you're not switching sports that easily as well. Obviously, I don't know, like, you could argue that you have to relearn a whole game, get your friends to play it as well, which is also one of the harder parts. So
that's, I think, the biggest thing is it's one thing to get a player to give up on a game they've spent hundreds or thousands of hours into. It's a whole other question to get that player to then convince their friends to give up the hundreds or thousands of hours they've spent in a game. And sometimes there's a lot of money they've spent on skins and things that they don't want to give up on. So it's very, very difficult. And I think the other lesson with a lot of this, with the ages the average age of each of these games being so high, is that once people have committed to a game, they aren't leaving, and companies keep trying to break in with a new one. They keep trying to maybe this time it'll work, maybe this one will work. But like, among this list, we have like, what's the newest one? I mean, I guess you'd say Call of Duty 2.0 is very new. EA Sports FC 24 on PlayStation was number 4 for the year. So there are like some newer ones, but they're annual updates.
I mean, yeah, that's still FIFA though. Like, they're not starting fresh. I think Apex is still one of the bigger ones, like chugging along there. Like, that was really something, a game that had to kind of start like a brand new IP. So I think that's still very impressive what they were able to do.
Yeah. But speaking of impressive things, we can wrap up with this one. It seems the impossible is starting to happen, ladies and gents. I've seen some of you guys mention this in chat. Hollow Knight Silksong has been raided in South Korea.
Whoa.
It's apparently a thing. which is crazy.
They played it. The South Korean rating.
I was like, who? Yeah, no, it's apparently coming. They've said it's classified for players 12 and older, according to the rating. Yeah, the rating was discovered after Microsoft launched Hollow Knight Silksong store page on Xbox this week. So a lot of this is landing right about the same time. They're launching the store page. It's getting rated. And typically these ratings tend to drop relatively close to when the games actually launch. And it was publicized also because Xbox president Sarah Bond reminded players that the title will be available on Xbox Day One yesterday. So she retweeted this picture of the store page and said, "Who's looking forward to Day One? Fire emoji, Xbox Game Pass." So it seems like it's on the incoming.
Yeah, well, I remember a thing that I heard about these ratings as well, and that's that they usually happen, obviously, again, they have to play the game and then rate them, and why they sometimes get public before the game actually releases is because the publishers forget to go to the ratings board and say our release date has changed. So usually when the ratings are public, because this rating was actually from February 20th, but it was just made public, and these ratings usually get public when the game is out, because then people want to look at the rating. But if the company does not go to the ratings board and say, yo, we delayed the game internally, it's not that date anymore, then the rating board will still publish the rating because they thought, okay, yeah, this is the date you guys communicated. So what could also be the case for the games that we see rated nowadays, that at one point the plan was to have them, I mean, for Outlaws, we know that they once wanted to do it early 2024. The March when we saw the first ratings made sense, end of March. And maybe for Silksong, it was like February 20th. But that still means that, they wanted it at one point. And again, usually when a rating happens, it's then 60 days, 90 days later. So I could totally see this being like a shadow drop at the game. At the Xbox showcase or something.
Yeah.
That would be kind of big.
Yeah, I think that would be a cool mic drop moment. sorry, Dylan in chat, I just fell to my knees in Walmart.
What?
Just, yes, finally. Yeah, it's been in the works for a long time. It was announced back in February of 2019. That's how long we've been sitting on this. Announced in February.
Was it first like a DLC?
Yeah, it's... let's see, last May, Team Cherry delayed the game from a planned release in the first half of 2023 to an unspecified launch window. According to the devs, it will feature a brand new kingdom, over 150 different enemies, and the Silk Soul mode, a new difficulty setting that greatly changes the game after the first playthrough. It just seems like this probably started as something relatively small, and then it's just grown bigger and bigger and bigger. And now... it seems to be close. So, booyah. There you go.
I totally forgot about it. You put it in the title, but we still managed to snuck it into the episode.
Yep. Sure did.
Yeah.
As much as I'd love to just talk about Suicide Squad all day long.
Yeah, I know. Enough Suicide Squad. Okay, that's the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Some people just joined. Well, you can get back and watch the whole thing.
We appreciate every single one of you. You guys are amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you to Mike also for subbing with Prime. Mr. Saints also. And thank you over on the YouTube side for super chat from Kush. Appreciate you. You all are wonderful. If you listen to the show on the go, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you listen to, we're glad to have you. Leave a rating. Helps us out. Work your magic. We appreciate you greatly.
Still at the 5 stars.
Yeah.
And we have quite some new ratings. 62.
Oh, baby.
49 when I last looked. It has been a month, though. But still, we see you. We see those 5 stars. And if we reach 4.9, we're stopping. So please keep the 5 stars.
Yeah, we're shutting down.
We quit.
Yeah, can you imagine if we're just like,
Luke, yeah, I mean, only doing it for 5 stars. Yeah, if people think we're worthless.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna be back next week is the plan. Hopefully, we're gonna have more stuff to talk about. We're getting into an interesting time of year where there might not be a ton of games releasing that a lot of people are looking for, like on the AAA scale. But there's a lot of indie devs that are releasing stuff. There's a lot of city builders releasing in April. There's some games like Stellar Blade that some people are gonna devour.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, the demo was pretty great.
Yeah, I was like not considering that game at all, and then I played the demo. I was like, okay, I see what we're doing. We're cooking. Like, crazy set pieces, pretty good combat, a crazy boss, or a couple crazy boss encounters. Yeah. There's another one after you finish the demo. Yeah, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. So it's going to be a very interesting time.
Going to be a bumpy ride.
How long were you sitting on that? How long were you sitting on
that? I just came up with it, to be honest.
That's amazing. Wow. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful bumpy ride for the rest of your day. Yeah. Much love. We'll see you soon. Hugs and kisses.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.